There, I guess we're ready to start. This is Judith Carson, and I'm speaking with Eugene Bovaird. It is November 20th, I think, or thereabouts, 2009. How long have you lived, and how long has your family lived in this area?
Probably since 1935, maybe, or something of that nature.
When you say 35, you or your family totally?
My family totally. I think we moved to Kingerston in about 1935.
Okay.
I was born in 1931, during the second or third year of the Depression. And my family were working people.
Right.
Uh-huh. So they were quietly affected with the Depression. And we moved to various places. And I was born in Boar's Head. That's by Milledgeville.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What a different spot now.
Isn't it?
And then we moved to East St. John, as I remember. And because of I had an allergy, I had asthma. So they had to get me out of the fog.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to we went to live there. And then it was sort of a backward spot at the time, but
Can you describe it at all? I know you
it was a big country house, and there was no running water inside, and no electric lights. It was kerosene and so forth. Of course, as kids, we thought it was great.
Sure, sure. What road were you on? What street?
Green Road.
On Green Road.
Yes.
Because there weren't many houses in the area at that time, were there?
Yes, amount of houses on that road, but probably eight houses on the Green Road, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But it stopped at the top of the hill, that's now, of course, it cuts around and comes down on the Gibbon Road. No, it's so Rancho Road.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I think back, transportation was a sort of a tough situation in the wartime. I don't think there's only one person on the Green Road that had a car at the time, or two people maybe, the Marcuses at the bottom of the Green Road. And I think Harry Green always had something that you could get around to the job from one to another. But ordinary people did not have automobiles. And in the wintertime, roads were impassable 2 or 3 weeks at a time. In the wintertime, during the war, I remember my mother and I hauling coal in the toboggan up the Green Road from Manny's drugstore.
Oh, my. Which would be down at the bottom.
Yeah, And it was coke. Coke is a fairly light coal.
Okay.
And the large bags would overlap the toboggan a bit. So you were, besides the toboggan, you were plowing the road with the bag. And but we thought that was great. We were out to bring up two bags a night or something like that.
Really?
And it would be left on the end of the road for a certain period of time and this sort of thing. And you wouldn't see very much traffic on the main road. A doctor or something like that could call the government and maybe a your road could be plowed out if an emergency, but other than that, it just stayed that way. And
so you would pretty much have to walk everywhere.
We used to walk to Sunday school and walk to church. It'd be about a mile and a quarter or something of that nature. And
that would be St. David's.
St. David's at the it wasn't St. David's at the time, it was just
the
Rossi Church or whatever.
Excuse me.
So, do you want to?
I've got a lozenge.
Oh, yeah.
It's just an allergy and annoying to other people.
No, it's not.
So, how long did you live there?
Well, I lived there to probably 1953 or something like that.
And, oh, well, that's good. So you could, well, keep talking then. This is great.
Yeah.
Tell me what else you remember about life in that area.
Well, the main highway only consisted, in the wintertime, consisted three black lines. That's where the chains had beat the snow off the asphalt. So when two vehicles met, it was sometimes courteous for one to pull off to the side so the other one could proceed, you know, without sideswiping the vehicle. As I remember, it wasn't so much the gasoline, it was tires for vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And as there was no snow tires too much at that time, it was all chains.
Of course.
And the chains would not, you know, stand up to any great amount of driving. They would break and so forth. And so our kindies there used to run a taxi, and he would save a lot of people a lot of headaches by, you know, going to the store for them or whatever and picking up things.
Now, excuse me, Eugene, just to clarify, so the time we're talking now would be like the 40s and 50s?
In the 40s, early 40s, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, it was sometimes pretty chilly, you know, walking in the wintertime. Although we were pretty well dressed, the old law in my family was that you wore the breeches until the ice went out of the camper cases, and then you could put shorts on. Well, boys, this is a pretty cool day. In May, is it?
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's right, or?
Right. We sort of had to hustle to school or whatever to make sure we stayed warm. The other transportation systems, like the railway, which was very good for people going to St. John to work. There was a train going at 8 o'clock every morning, and I think it passed Kinghurst about 8 o'clock. And you would see people, hustling down the roads to get to the railway station at the time. And I used to notice, older people, you'd think twice, these old people were both 50.
Yes, it's all relative.
Yeah, but they would, they'd be running, groceries, my mother would go to town maybe once a month, and I don't know where she went in town, but I think it was someplace on Union Street where she could get an order put together and it'd be delivered by Rossi Express from St. John.
Oh, right. That's right. I remember John Fitzgerald talking about that.
And it would come out, and it would cost 25 cents. Which is probably, when you think of it today, it'd be five loaves of bread, And so if that's how you have to think of those things back in that particular time. No, it's not for me.
Were there many other children around?
There seemed to be, but as growing up, I was sort of isolated. It was like a half an hour, not about half an hour's walk, but it was probably 20-minute walk, you know, to maybe to somebody who would be maybe a couple of years older than me, or a couple of years younger, depends what they did for sport, you know. But so I always consider myself maybe a little on the isolated side. After schools at that time, most kids had things that they had to do at home, you know. Carry water, look after, maybe everyone had chickens at that time, I think. We used to get load of slab wood every year, and that would have to be manufactured for at least starting the stoves. Yeah, our old house had a self feeder. It was a stove that burned hard coal or coke, and it had a magazine. The magazine was a self feeding device, which allowed the coal to come down a tube and burn, and as it burnt, it went into ashes, it kept coming down.
Right.
And you would have to fill that every morning. And in the room that it was in, it would be 95, and eventually the heat would trickle off into other areas of the house. And that was the main heating device, and most people was... what they had is some sort of a coal burning. So there wasn't that many automatic type of stoves, except hot air maybe. But there was a few large hot water people or houses that had hot water. But
Did you go down to the river?
Yes.
Much like
oh,
it?
Yes. Well, when during the early 40s, after we had lunch of some sort, we would have to have a rest before we went swimming. And you were supposed to have a nap, but, you know... a lot of pages flipping and so forth, but at that time the big scare was infantile paralysis or
polio.
Yes. And you weren't supposed to get overexhausted or something, and you had to look after your digestive system and all this sort of thing. And eat the right foods and whatever. How many cod liver oil capsules have you taken? I used to tell people years ago, we had a pantry off of our kitchen, and the capsules were in the pantry, and my mother would send me in to get a capsule and have one, and I'd take the cover off, bang the dish on the table, put the cover back on. But she noticed that the capsules weren't going down.
Yeah, you should have taken the capsule out and hidden.
Yeah, that would have been better.
So where would you go swimming?
In the mechanical cases, a place called Randall's Beach at the time, I believe. I'd be just down opposite the ranch off road, right down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Down there, it was
Rattles?
Randall's.
Randall's. Yeah. Randall's Beach, okay.
Yeah. And the sand was the size of softballs, you know.
Yes, yeah.
So in no time your feet would, I don't know, get toughened up to the stones, or you'd get used to them. it was stubbing the toes that was more of a problem than anything else.
Yes.
But I suppose we'd spend an hour and a half at the beach, which seemed like at that time a long time.
Yes, yeah.
As we probably went down together in probably a group.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two families or whatever. And being the oldest boy in the group, things were expected of you, you know,
mm-hmm.
like to wait and
yes.
be a good example and all this sort of thing.
Now, in the wintertime, did you skate or was it possible?
Yes, so we had. Everyone in our family had skates. I don't know if in the 40s, in the early 40s, there certainly wouldn't be new skates.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a skate exchange or something. You
oh,
know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You could take your skates in and get a size bigger or whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
you needed. Or, and we never seemed to have any problem, you know, with this arrangement. We'd get them sharpened. I think they were sharpened before you know,
sure.
they got them there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no rinks very much. The latter part of the war, I remember George Dobbin used to run the rink and,
okay, right.
And on the Rossy Greens there. And, but after that, Jiggs Miller, I believe, took over for
mm-hmm.
a while.
Yes.
And he used to allow us boys to have a half an hour round of hockey after we shoveled the snow after a snowstorm. The snow plow would plow the,
mm-hmm.
The major part of the snow off at the end of the rink. But then there would be hand scrapers, and then there'd be snow left against the boards, so that it had to be shoveled up over the boards. And so it didn't seem to take us very long to
mm-hmm.
do that when the idea of playing hockey was in the air.
So the kids then from Rossay and the Kingshurst area played together, or
yeah, pretty well. It was a. Campbell Mackay has that Norman house, had that Norman house as you come into Rossy, up in the hill, a big brick
yes,
house.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he had one boy, I think Douglas, Doug Mackay. And they had a rink there. And that was probably for the people that went to school with him and so
mm-hmm.
forth. I think he went to Rossy Collegiate, and there's other families that with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Campbell Mackay could see that maybe they needed something organized a little bit better. And so he bought them all sweaters and so forth and tried to arrange hockey games for them and so forth. That sort of helped to look after people of that age.
Mm-hmm. Now, which boys would they be? Would there be any from the community as well as like going to RCS?
No, they'd be all from the community.
Okay.
They'd be the Anglins and the Harleys and.
Okay.
There's no who, you know, we never paid too much. We never had the ordinary person never had the hockey gear.
Right, okay.
Okay,
yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you had a scribbler yeah. down the front of your...
your shins.
Yeah, shins.
Your
yeah.
pads.
And if it was a big five, that was all the better. That was a cheap notebook with a rough paper, about that long. But it served its purpose.
It worked, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
And what you would have is probably a tire tube cut and strips, you know,
right.
for elastics.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
To hold them in place.
Sure.
And sometimes it would be bicycle strips because of the the better stretch in the bicycle one, and you had to watch out it didn't cut the circulation off.
So now this was, you're talking like the, this would be during the war.
During the war, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like after? Like, well, okay, first of all, during the war, was there any awareness? I mean, you were young, but was there any awareness that the war was going on?
Oh, yes. I think I was in grade six, I'd be 11. That's when I became an Army cadet. And we all had uniforms. And we all drilled.
Where?
In the play on the school ground.
Okay, so it was part of through
part
the school.
Of the school.
Okay.
Oh yes,
great.
And the women all were.
The girls as well.
The girls were the girls wore a white shirt and a dark skirt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that was it. I don't think there was too much of a regulation on foot gear because people were going to make the best of it, you know, what they had, you know.
Yeah.
We used to do our shooting training at the Rossi Collegiate on Saturday mornings.
Right.
There was three bays, or take three people at a time, and we'd go up and target practice or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. These were 22 cooies, which were, and they made them real heavy with
okay,
with
the
wood stock.
Okay, now spell that. Cooie?
C-O-O-E-Y, I think.
Okay, I can check. Okay.
Yeah, I think they were made put up by the Savage people. I'm not sure. Savage Army.
And what would they shoot? What type of pellets? Or?
I don't know, 22 shells.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And you were kids. That must have been exciting.
Well, we were brainwashed, you know, pretty well, you know, and before we even got to there, it was we had demonstrations how to use fire extinguishers, you know, and especially the stirrup pumps, the ones that sat in a pail of water.
Right.
And had about 6 feet of hose.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for, in case of an air raid and a sanitary bomb came down through your house, you'd be able to handle the situation, or your neighbor's house, or whatever. And we always had, every morning, Monday morning, we used to have what we call a Canada Carries On presentation. It was newsreels, okay, and probably would have maybe two movies that you can watch. Some would be the Eastern Front with Soviet Union and their fight against it, and then it would be the Navy one, the Canadian Navy ones, and so on and so forth. So you were and all your notebooks in school had a plane on it. And it would be identified with a, you know, the proper name on it. And
really?
It wasn't.
Was it scary for you as children?
No. It's because they'd brag, you know, they'd brag this plane up how good it was and how well it was protecting us and so forth. And although we probably at one time or another weren't doing too very good.
Yes. Yeah.
And. That's the type of brainwashing or psychological warfare or whatever they used, you know, to sort of condition you.
Yes.
And even when I was in grade 9, when the war ended, a lot of people were sort of, you know, disappointed. You know, we didn't get in it, you know.
Oh, yes.
Another year, I'd have been able to go, you know, this type of thing.
Were there a lot of the men away?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, from the community?
Yes. My father was very early in the war, you know, and probably, I think they needed him because of his construction experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was your father's name?
Ronald Bavarian.
Ronald, okay.
Yeah. And it was, you know, working in military camps trying to improve the situation. My father first went to Utopia. They opened a big military camp there. Ended up in tents, you know, right in the middle of winter time. And I have pictures of my father, you know, trying to get this these kerosene heaters going.
Really?
And there's lots of stories of them, you know, removing the straw from the mattresses, made little fires to keep warm. Yeah.
So did he have to stay there, or could he come home?
Always, he was. He'd be there. He probably was home once a month or something like that.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was just the kids and the mothers at home then.
That's right.
Mm.
And they became fairly good managers, I think, because at that time. The war gave them a steady income. It might have been quite small to, you know, where you would look at incomes today, but at least you would know at the end of the month you would have a certain amount of money
mm-hmm.
coming in, which some would have to put away for power bills and
mm-hmm.
food and so forth. There was no extras, but you know, it did make things
more
stable.
Sorry, just to clarify, that was money that your father received, or that the
yes, well,
okay.
I don't think he received it. I think
it just came.
Came to the.
Mm-hmm.
My father would get so much money. I don't know what it would be, but it wouldn't be very much to. Look after his personal needs, and that's it. There was no reason for
mm-hmm.
him to have any money.
Mm-hmm.
I remember us bartering in the sense that we, I guess we sold. Just sold eggs. You know, if we had any extra
mm-hmm.
eggs, we sold them to the neighbors who want eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably got a good price on them, and what could you do with them?
Exactly.
You know, the sad part was when the hen didn't lay one. And my mother would say, well, gosh, Father's coming home this weekend. We're going to have a big chicken dinner. When you only have a dozen hens, you know everyone. You know all the hens, you know. And that used to bother me.
Yeah.
Bothered me more than anything else,
really?
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
As when you have 10 hens or whatever, they get to know you and they jump up on top of you and so forth.
Oh.
And as I said before, when there's maybe not that many people associating with you on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Your pets sort of take over, you know,
hard.
Eh?
Yeah, that would be hard. Yeah. Now, what about after the war? Did much change, you know, in the way of life?
After the war?
Mm.
I think we had a lot of teachers who needed help. You know, but probably didn't get it, you know. I remember one George Wilson, my grade 9 teacher. We'd ask him a few questions, and he'd turn away, and he'd see tears coming out of his eyes, you know, and of course everyone walk away.
Mm.
But, suffering from losing a lot of people. He was in the Air Force, and he seen a lot of his friends.
I don't think they realized. I think it's only in recent years they realize how terrible the after effect is on people who've served.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as you probably have found out, you can't get people even to talk very much about the war. They just don't want to talk about it. They hate to admit that they were involved.
Yes, yeah. No, not an easy time for sure. But in the community, like, did more people come into the community, into the area?
Yes, there was a big... Well, there started to be a big explosion at that time, you know, of people coming in. And it was quite a housing shortage, you know. People were, didn't seem to affect us. We had a huge house, but people were getting married and didn't have no place to to go. They were living in a couple of rooms somewhere, all this sort of thing. And maybe maybe some of the families were like doubling up, you know, just give them a place, you know, to stay. But I'd say probably in 1950, probably things were improving somewhat. You know, there was gratuities, and you know, from the military and so forth, where loans could be received. A lot of the men got relief by going to university. You know, they were lucky in the sense that they did. It was a place made for them. And there was no local university at that time, so they'd probably have to go to UNB or Malé or one of these other universities. So I would look after them for 4 years or whatever, you know.
Yes.
So it probably was a slow situation, but you know, the city of St. John established quite a few areas where they put up, I wouldn't say wartime housing, but there were veterans housing or whatever. They weren't the best in the world, but it certainly served the purpose.
Well, let's get back to the church. This is very good, because nobody else that I've interviewed has talked at all about the students' training and the cadets, and that's very interesting.
Yeah.
But let's go back then to St. David. So you have been at that church a long time.
Yes.
Really? Yeah.
Well... I was a student, Sunday school student or whatever, and then we had young people's. And then after I left the area, I suppose in the early 60s or something, I went back and had some responsibilities in the church, not that many, but I didn't live in, I lived in East St. John at the time, but I still would travel back and forth, because there was some place to go, and the other larger churches wasn't safe to me, because I was used to, you know, seeing the old gang or whatever. But I was never one to volunteer too fast. You know?
Smart.
Well, I think that, there was never seemed to be enough hours in the day, you know, and so that's one of the reasons I probably didn't volunteer that much.
And what would the numbers be like when you were first going to the church? Would it be a small congregation?
I think they mentioned 11 families in that church when it first started. A lot of these families were senior families. So you're talking about a man, a senior, a woman, and a man, you know, or whatever. It wasn't too many large families going, I don't think. We had a lot of adherents, that is, people that came to Sunday school because there was some place to go, and it was heated.
Right. Yeah.
The only other place heated was the Rashid Rink.
Really?
Well,
and that was it?
Yeah, well, that was it. You know, where would the young person go? Eventually, he built a theater out in Rossi at the end of the road.
The corner, right.
Right at the corner. And if you behaved yourself, you maybe be able to spend the next half hour in a restaurant or something, you know, by getting another biscuit or something. You know, it was just not a...
We take our heating for granted, don't we now?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yes. All the...
Can you think of any changes over the years that you've seen in the church?
Well, the I think that the church has a way better and a lot stronger outlook on the community, and participates much more greatly than in our church. I probably in the early 40s, is it, where is the money coming, going to get, you know, where are we going to get the money for the coal, you know?
It was more effort, a struggle to survive.
Survive, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On individual churches. Not only our church, but all churches.
Yes.
Probably in the same
mm-hmm.
thing. But today, I don't know if food banks is the answer. I don't think it is, but I think a lot of people, that's the last place they want to go, is a food bank. But if you've got a couple of kids, you're more or less forced into it.
Yes.
And I think it could have been handled in another way. That is to say, a person could apply and get some assistance whereby they would get a coupon or something, and or stamps or something, and purchase this material
mm-hmm.
as needed. But it's a form of welfare, and you have to have administrators and all this sort of thing. And
mm-hmm.
the first thing is to get work project for a number of people, and the number of people that benefit is minimal.
That's true.
To
that's
what?
True. Yeah, yeah. What do you think the state of the St. David's is today? Is it?
Well, all churches are having a problem, you know, keeping their congregations and. And when I was growing up, there was no thought of us on Sunday you went to church, and there was an outing. You could see, you know, friends and all this sort of thing. And but today there's an awful lot of going on on a Sunday that
mm-hmm.
and. Kids play hockey on Sunday, you know, and it's organized in that fashion because people are doing the coaching and so forth. That's the only time they have
that's
is
true.
Sunday and all this sort of thing, which is, I think, good. But they don't get into the habit of or discipline or whatever you want to call it. It's hard to think of. I remember when we first moved here in Rossi, I was in Bathurst for 11 years. I taught in Bathurst, and I came down, and there was a building, the new Kennebec Cases Valley High School in 75, or finishing it up, and they were running a vote or whatever you call it, club site or whatever.
Oh, yes.
On whether we should have swimming pool at the and they were telling us how much it was going to cost for the swimming pool and so forth, and it was quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. All about it. We were taking our kids for swimming into the Simons.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't a big thing, Saturday morning or something. We'd be home again about 11 o'clock, and the kids had their time or whatever. But the funny thing was, they were building a new prison in East St. John for young people.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah.
And people, to me, they couldn't see the, the connection there.
Yeah.
If you haven't gotten something for the kids to do,
that's where they could end up.
That's, well,
Why don't you build the facility for them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not only swim pools, that are required. It's a new way of looking at maybe our school curriculums, too.
Mm-hmm.
And studying vocational education, it was often thought that, or found out that people have to have some reason to go to work or whatever, and they have to make feel that they're accomplishing something and so forth. And so, I often wondered, or even some companies in the United States, I don't know, it was one of the fast food outfits were suggesting maybe some of their students who did very good, in school and so forth, and who worked there, should be taking, courses in and organizing school activities and so forth. So that there'd be something for them. There's been some attempts to get kids involved in doing something like the Rossi Living Museum, goes around and talk to elderly people and so forth. And maybe it doesn't mean very much, in dollars and cents or whatever. What's it really worth, or what are they going to get out of it, and so forth. It's hard to measure.
Yes.
It's very hard to measure. If you give students responsibility, I think there is a good chance that they'll develop into something.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Well, Eugene, this is great. You've given me a lot, actually, both on the church and